Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Stephen St. John and Nate Buchanan now joined by Sam Mellinger from the Kansas City Star in studio. Good morning, Sam. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
You know what? I'm doing really good.
You look like it.
I'm happy. This is a good week. It's a good week with many possibilities.
He's on a Jack White pre-concert high right now.
Am I glowing?
This. I heard this, yes.
Yeah. Actually, I'll be honest, Jake's on a pre-concert high right now, yeah. To be totally honest.
Different kind of high.
Yeah, well. You're going to float right out there to Providence Medical Center amphitheater. You're excited, though, aren't you?
I'm pumped. I'm pumped.
I don't know how much of the backstory you know, but Jake has a lot of reasons to be excited about this. He's really going to...
I'm going to take it in. Yes, please.
Okay. Because we keep talking about it,
please,
but people are like,
do.
Okay.
Yeah.
The worst one for you was when the White Stripes came to town at Starlight, and we were all going to go.
I was just a young boy.
And he just turned.
I was in my early 20s.
They're one of my favorite bands. I love Jack White.
I love the
music.
Yeah.
Love them.
And I was so excited to go. What year was it? Do we remember? Was it
2004, I want to say. 2005, maybe.
We'll have to look it up.
I can tell you it was before 2007.
So it was when they were going to be at Starlight, and we just couldn't wait. And we're all getting tickets.
Fall of 2006, maybe.
And Jake was like, maybe. I don't know. I'm like, you love the White Stripes. He had this attitude like maybe everyone was having too much fun talking about it, and so he's not going to go.
It's a complicated time in life, whatever it was, right?
He was being the contrarian. Maybe I won't go. You listen to their music all the time. You play their bump music. You think they're the best band going right now.
They are.
He just wasn't interested. And so we all went.
I was.
And it was fantastic. White Stripe at their... White Stripes with their peak at Starlight. What do you want? Weather was great. And the next day we're just talking about it, and then it went right into I can't believe I didn't go. Like the realization, like 12 hours later, why didn't I go?
Yeah, what's wrong
with me? What was the reason?
It's just I was dating a gal who we had some problems and I had to try to fix those problems.
And so that prevented him from going, right? So missed opportunity there to see Jack White.
Man.
So then years later, a few years ago, it's me, it's Jake, and Richie and Phil.
Yeah.
And so then I got Richie and Phil all about Jack White and the CD. Lazaretto was one of my favorite CDs of the past 10 years. Couldn't wait to go.
Spring of 2014.
Play at the Midland. And when you go to the Midland, intimate
summer.
Setting.
Love the Midland. Yeah.
Oh, you're damn right you love the Midland. and you want to... It's part of the show, man. Hey, and you know what? We're not worried where you were. We're worried where you are right now, and it's in a good place.
That's true.
But this makes it even better where you are. You want to tell Sammy?
Wow. It's 8/18.
You want to tell Sammy?
2014.
What happened to this?
I was overserved by myself.
He overserved himself.
Yeah, I fell asleep during the show. I passed out. I passed out.
In my seat.
On the floor.
See, luckily, like me and Sports were down on the floor standing up.
So Nate and Aaron are down there moving around and stuff. And we met at the drum room, one of my favorite places at the President Hotel. Love it. Fantastic
chicken wings.
As we went there to eat chicken wings.
I
had chicken wings. The boys had chicken wings. Jake had more than chicken wings.
Right.
And so, and he even said, he goes, you have a drink? I said, no, I don't want to drop alcohol in me because I want to, this,
I'll
I
take
love
his.
This concert so much, I can't wait. And three songs.
That, oh, God. Yeah.
And I remember.
Slumped over in his chair.
I woke up for the encore.
Phil goes, should we wake him up? He's missing Jack White. I said, you know what? At some point, Uncle Jake's going to bounce back, and you're going to see something special. And then the encore comes out, all of a sudden,
yep.
This is exactly how it was. It like startled everyone around, like, hey, who's that?
Where did this guy come from?
And I mean, let me tell you what, last three or four songs, like it's the best, like he was never gone, best yeah. I've ever seen. You know, Seven Nation Army clapping, like, and he's like doing this, like talking. And I go, where did this come from? It's like someone just, it's like someone hit him with, like, you know, with a stun gun. So he's back up, he's ready.
Eduardo Nájera.
He's engaged. He's dancing. Oh, what? He goes, what a show! You know, so, like tomorrow. I'm like, tomorrow. I wonder what he's gonna think. So then we go in the show the next day. He's like, oh man, it was great. I go, do you want me to tell you the truth or not? I go, that was one of the greatest concerts I've ever been to in my life. And it was. And I wasn't trying to. It just was. He goes, well, you know, maybe he'll come back. And I think there's some kind of weird story. This Jack White is done touring. He's not going to come back. And Nate was talking about how great the concert was. Aaron was talking about, and it was just so bad for him. But he's back tomorrow night, and my guy is ready. This is like over a decade in the making for him to see a full Jack White concert. As much as he loves him, and I'm almost even more excited.
Like 15 years in the making.
You know what I mean? I said, now that you have the backstory, you see why this is such a big deal? We're just counting down
this
the days.
This is amazing.
I just want to put you in bubble wrap, though, before that show. Yeah. Make sure everything's good. Yeah. Like you're break your leg or something.
A lot's happened to me in 4 years, Sam.
And you know what? A lot's going to happen to you tomorrow night. Aren't you excited?
Pumped.
Just want to see
my
this.
My buddy Cop's going out there with me.
Oh, boy. No. Let's do it. So that's all. So that's why it's a great week. Not only for us, but for Jake. We want him to experience
draft
something.
Especially for Jake.
Right.
Especially.
And then the NFL draft and everything
right.
else. Okay. And so, we'll spend the majority of the time talking about the draft. Let's get in some Royals talk because they won.
Yeah.
And I feel like we had to seize the opportunity to talk about a win. They won two games against the Tigers over the weekend. And so let's start with some good individual performances. What about this Jorge Soler and this this on base percentage over 400? What the hell's going on here? I like what I see.
So that had always been, and by the way, like this entire week, at least until tomorrow, like every 30 minutes or so, I'm just going to have this mental picture of slumped over Jake just popping up.
Right.
But hey! I'm gonna get past that for right
every
now.
Every time you hear the NFL draft and when they talk about a guy's explosion, you think about that because he showed tremendous explosion.
Great first step.
Right, exactly right.
His numbers don't necessarily show it from we're talking about Jorge Soler now. His numbers don't necessarily show it from when he was with the Cubs and you know, he was just so bad last year. Nothing mattered, but he's always had the reputation of knowing the strike zone and having a good idea of what's a ball and what's a strike. That was one of the main things, that some of the Royals scouts, Dayton included, you know, talked a lot about, you know, publicly and privately when they made that deal. It was like, you know, the raw power is what grabs your eye, right? That he has the most natural raw power of any player that the Royals have had since Dayton got here. And I don't know how far back you'd have to go before that, but we're talking, you know, at least 12 years. But he's always had also a very good idea about the strike zone. And that's not something that's easily taught. As Royals fans over the years know, that's not something that you should take for granted when a guy knows what's a strike and what's not. And you know, the Royals have always kind of had this idea that, you know, that skill will allow him to flourish because it's a little bit, and look, like last year is an argument against this, right? But it's a little bit of a buffer against big slumps because if you know what's a strike and what's not, at the very least, if you're putting swings on balls that you can hit, if you're putting swings on balls that are, you know, sort of in your swing path, you should be able to be productive. And I think, you know, there's some comfort that he has now that he didn't have last year. You know, I remember hearing a lot of people say, like, these are people inside the game that were saying, you know, he's going to struggle. You know, he'll struggle with the league. The switch in leagues, he'll struggle with, you know, being the guy that they traded away Davis for. You know, he'll want to kind of overextend himself, but toward the end of the season, you're going to see that talent come out a little bit. That was the thought that I heard from a few different people. Well, that wasn't true, right? He struggled the entire season, but maybe this is sort of what those guys were expecting at the end of last season, of a little bit of a comfort level, you know, and being able to, again, be patient, wait for his pitch. Now, the power hasn't really come yet. He's got the one home run. You know, he's that will come. But I guess what's impressive is he's known for his power. He's not hitting a bunch of home runs, and he's still a productive player right now, offensively.
Yeah, I mean, I'm encouraged. I'm encouraged by what he's doing so far. Like you said, I mean, you hope that some of the power shows up as well. But, I mean, it's early. I mean, he's, you know.
And not just early, I'm sorry to interrupt, but just a lot of these games have been just freezing cold.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. It's not stopping Moose from hitting dongs, though.
It is sure not.
He looks incredible. Man on a mission, all that stuff. I mean, it's a good narrative, but, I mean, he looks like a man on a mission out to prove everyone wrong.
He sure does. No, I mean, he's going to make some money if he keeps doing it like this.
Will he?
Yeah.
With that free agent class that's coming up, dubbed as maybe the greatest free agent class ever in Major League Baseball, and because do you think he will make, I mean, he'll obviously get better than what he was offered in this past offseason, but it might be.
He's not going to get the Hosmer contract or whatever. It's just, they've got a couple things going for him at the end of the year that part of, and it's just part, but part of, and I think it's a significant part of, you know, sort of the stalled market for him was the draft pick compensation. You know, teams used to not really care about their draft picks. And the pendulum has swung so far to the other side now where, you know, there's some, you know, certainly agents and their bias, but there's some people on the management side too who think that some teams are kind of overvaluing draft picks and maybe the pendulum's going to start to swing back. But anyway, the pendulum is where it is and teams are overvaluing or valuing very highly these draft picks that they would have to give up to sign Moose. Well, he's not going to have that at the end of this year. You can't do it twice in a row. Now, another thing that he's going to have that he didn't have this last offseason is Josh Donaldson is going to be a free agent. Manny Machado, depending on, I'm still a little, our team's really going to think of him as a shortstop. I don't know. But he's going to be no better than the second best third baseman on the market and maybe the third. And we saw what the market was for third baseman last year. I mean, look, like maybe the spending will be jarred loose a little bit in a way that it wasn't last year. But anyway, the point is he's going to have, if he has another, you know, 40-ish home run season with some better supporting numbers, you know, because last year, I got this right here. I mean, he hit a lot of home runs, but that was kind of it. You know what I mean? The slugging was good. The on base was, could have been better. Like, this is a much better all-around season, right? Month in, right? But this is a much better all-around season. He's going to make some money. He's not going to have a Hosmer contract, but he could get, I don't know.
How much?
$345 or $445. So I don't know, something like that.
How much can he change his reputation? Apparently, from all the stuff we read, is that the biggest issue that a lot of people had was that he's an a-hole, basically, to put it simply. If he's a super good guy, gets into it with Danny Klingscale and any post-game locker room talks or, you know, does any of that stuff, if he's good all year, will that change people's attitude or will they just look at it and go, well, yeah, anybody can behave for a year when they know there's a big check on the line, but if we commit $50 million to him, is he going to go back to being the guy we were afraid he was?
Yeah, you know what is weird about that? Like, I feel like some of that was, like, reverse engineered.
Like hindsight, like trying to explain away why he didn't get a good contract.
Yeah, we know the result.
Yeah.
So what caused it? To me, it was much more sort of structural about the CBA and about, you know, specific markets for third baseman, about the devaluing of home runs.
Yeah.
That, like, the baseball part of it. I get, you know, what they were saying about, you know, attitude and weight, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, he was always going to be a big body guy. I remember when they drafted him. And remember when they drafted him as a shortstop?
Yeah,
like, well, he played shortstop in high school. And
Royals
Billy
Butler was a third baseman when they drafted him.
But so. I remember talking to somebody in the Royals front office that's in on the drafting, and they compared him to Jim Thome as a body. And I was like, oh, this is your shortstop. This is the guy that you literally in the press conference downstairs were just saying, you know, that he's going to play shortstop. So, I mean, they always knew that he would not be, you know, he's not going to look like Alcides Escobar or Lorenzo Cain or whatever. But, you know, he did have a little bit of extra weight last year, right? And that was strange going into a contract year. I mean, he performed, but I think that may have been a little bit of a red flag. I mean, honestly, like, his attitude, he's been kind of a central part of the personality of a team that won two pennants in a row in a World Series. I mean, he's, you know, he had some maturing to do, right? Like a lot of us do, and certainly did when we were in our 20s. He had some maturing to do, but I don't think of him as sort of a, you know, a problem.
Yeah, I was really surprised to read all that personally.
I think that stuff was, look, the structural stuff, the system of baseball worked against Moose, and he didn't help himself with the weight, and you know, maybe there were one or two other things, but come on, man. I mean, he's not. I read that stuff. I'm like, really? Like that guy? Like, you know,
right. He was getting after everyone in the dugout on Friday night before they made the comeback to win, because the broadcast crew was talking about it. You could hear, I think Joel even said, you're Mike Moustakas, you know, kind of rallying the team and getting, you know, let's go, come on, let's get this. This game's
not
over.
Wasn't the infamous, or the not infamous, but the famous moment in the dugout in that comeback against the Astros,
yep,
wasn't it, Moose?
Yeah. And they were talking about that. They said, reminds you of, he goes, a lot of different stakes, but reminds you of what he did, you know, in that game four of the ALCS or the ALDS against the Astros, and they brought that up.
Yeah, I mean, he's this word is used too much in sports, so apologies, but like, he's a winner,
right?
Like, I really believe that. I believe that that's kind of who he is, and now, like, if you're gonna you know, lock into 3, 4, 5 years on a contract, you know, he'll be 30 years old. I think his birthday's in September. He'll turn 30 this season. You got to wonder how long he's gonna stay at that position. You know, already I think his range isn't what it was probably 4 years ago, but he's got a terrific arm. He's got great hands. He could still play the position, you know, I think above average, but at least average. And that's a tough position to play, too. I mean, that's a tough position to fill. I don't know, man. I think he's a good player. I think that, you know, some of the market stuff is still going to be there as far as, you know, the value of home runs. But he won't have a draft pick. Maybe some other teams, you know, will need a third baseman. Maybe there will be a need. You know, last year was weird. Like the most obvious need, or one of the most apparent needs, to me anyway, was New York, was the Yankees, and I think he would hit a million home runs in that ballpark and in that division too.
Not a fit anymore though. They traded for Drury, but he's been on the deal with migraines. But now this Miguel Andujar kid, mm-hmm. who was going to be the third baseman before they traded for Drury, but they didn't think he was ready. Look what he's done the past week.
I will say this.
Their farm system's ridiculous.
That's one market that I could see him struggling in just from a media standpoint.
Yeah.
You know, I think, like you said, I think he's a winner. I think the stuff in the clubhouse with his teammates and all that, I would not be worried about if I were a GM, but I would be a little concerned with media. You know, he loses his cool when media start kind of needling him or, you know, trying to dig for things, and that's all New York is.
I could see that.
You know, that'd be the one fear I would have about that. But I agree with you about the ballpark and all that. I mean, he'd hit a bazillion home runs. Yeah.
All right, we've got Sam Mellinger in the studio. When we come back, a couple of more thoughts on the Royals, and then we'll talk about the Chiefs and the upcoming NFL draft right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Okay, so we think that we're going to see Salvador Perez return this week, Alex Gordon, and maybe see Clay Buchholz get a chance in the rotation. He's looked good in both of his outings, including one yesterday down in Omaha, and that certainly would be a candidate for the Royals to have come up, hopefully pitch well, and flip him to a team that needs a veteran starter, because when he's healthy, he's effective. It's just, you know, is he healthy? But so far, so good with two minor league outings. But the guy we know is returning, although it's not going to be in a Royals uniform, is Lorenzo Cain. As the Royals have a two-game series against the Milwaukee Brewers starting tomorrow out at Kauffman Stadium. So we've had some time removed, or some time to remove us from the emotions of the end of last year and the fond farewells. And now Lorenzo Cain comes back. We talked to BMAC about this a little bit earlier because he, of course, played center field for the Royals.
What do you want for gift from me?
I want a cake and I want some ice cream. Right after the game, win or lose, I need a cake.
So now that Cain comes back in a Brewers uniform, what's your fondest memory? What will be going through your mind when he steps into the batter's box to that standing ovation tomorrow at Kauffman Stadium.
Yeah, well, there'll be a lot of thoughts because I think the standing ovation will last a while.
And it should.
Absolutely. That should be a happy, loud, long standing ovation. The kind where he steps out of the batter's box, takes his helmet off, and then there's like this awkward period between when he's ready to get back and swing and the crowd is not done cheering. There's a few. I mean, the one that probably stands above all else is just scoring from first on the single against Toronto. Yeah. And you know, I've watched that play. I'm sure you guys have too, a dozen times at least. And just the speed. I mean, he's a long strider, you know? And so once he gets going, man, like, I mean, he is a sprinter. And then he slides in.
Jumps
and then
up.
When he jumps up, and that was the cover of Sports Illustrated, like when he, you know, they caught the jump and he's punching the air. The diving catches against Baltimore in the ALCS when he basically, I don't remember anybody ever winning, you know, sort of a series MVP award. I mean, he was good offensively, but he basically won that because he caught everything that was hit to the outfield.
There was so much that came out about that, about him and that outfield defense that right during that ALCS. They did the Statcast thing on him that showed that like his route efficiency was like the highest in all of baseball. He got to top speed after like two steps. Mm-hmm. You know, he was up to 20 miles per hour running, all those things they did. And then they put out the stat, and I can't remember the specific number now, but like when Alex Gordon, Lorenzo Cain, and Jerod Dyson were in the outfield together, something like 12 fly balls landed.
Yeah.
The entire season.
I remember that. Yep.
Like, if it was a fly ball, one of those three guys caught it.
Yeah.
Like, they never hit the ground. That's kind of one of the big things I remember.
Yeah. I'll also remember, you know, he wasn't like the centerpiece of that trade. You know
right.
what I mean? I mean, he was a piece, and they were excited about him, but they didn't know he was going to be this good. And he didn't either. I remember when, my years get confused, but it was the year that he was probably ready for the big leagues, but they had Melky Cabrera and Francoeur and Gordon, and there was just no room in the outfield, so they sent him to Omaha to play. And I remember talking to him before, and this is a comparison that I'd heard, and maybe it's a lazy comparison, it's kind of superficial in some ways, but there were a couple scouts who were, you know, bringing up Torrey Hunter, and they said they saw him, you know, saw a little bit of Torrey Hunter in the swing, in the strides, in the build, and physically you can kind of see it, you know, the shoulders and stuff like that. And I just remember like asking him about that. And, you know, it was the first time that I kind of remember seeing that Lorenzo Cain smile that, you know, now is so famous. And he just kind of like, aw shucks, you know, he's like a country boy. He's, you know, a Southern country boy, and just kind of aw shucks, that would be amazing. And, you know, to watch him, he's obviously like, you know, even by professional athlete standards, he is incredibly gifted physically. The way he's able to, you know, coordination, the way he's able to run, strength, you know, all those things. But one of the things that I'll always remember about him is how hard he worked to do it. And, you know, famously had a late start to baseball, right? Like, didn't play baseball mm-hmm. until he was, what, 15 or whatever. But, you know, taught, like, think about this. Like, if he was a professional athlete, a center fielder, and probably his best gift was his speed, his best gift was his legs. And there was an off season about a year there where he just like completely relearned how to run, like just stripped it all down and relearned how to run. And that takes a certain level of commitment, of faith, of confidence, of a lot of things to, you know, kind of rip down. It's almost like, this is kind of a sloppy comparison probably, but, you know, Tiger Woods would always like redo a swing. You know, he'd win a tournament and then completely redo a swing because it wasn't good enough. And it was almost, you know, Lorenzo Cain, his best thing that he's got going for him is his speed. And he just completely shuts it down and relearns how to run. Now, there were health concerns. Like, that's why he did it. He kept pulling his hamstring and stuff like that. But that's another thing I always remember, is just kind of the work that is put in behind the scenes there.
How many people do you guys think will be there Tuesday?
I think it's going to be a smaller crowd than
right.
than I think should
yeah.
be there.
That's too bad. I mean, and I don't blame anybody.
5 and 15. It's a Tuesday night.
School's still in session.
Yeah.
I mean,
there might be a few that come out just to like see Lorenzo Cain again, but I don't think that happens as much as we sometimes can convince ourselves that it does. Right. I mean, there'll be a lot of people watching on TV.
It's just too bad. I mean, and I don't blame anybody because just listed all the reasons for it to be a horrible crowd, but it's just too bad because, you know, he deserves 20,000 people given that standing ovation that you just described, you know, and unfortunately it probably just isn't going to.
He'll get love, though. I mean, there'll be so many, like, bro hugs during batting practice. There'll be, I'm sure they'll do a video. Maybe I shouldn't say this out loud, but I'm pretty sure they'll do a video of him before the game. You know, everything that he gets on Tuesday and Wednesday, you know, like, throughout that series, like, he deserves. I mean, he was a central part. You know, it was always like Haas and Moose, you know, because those were the guys that came up through the system. But Lorenzo Cain was the best player on that 2015 team. And if we are to take, you know, look, there's a lot of old-timers that will say the 1977 team is the best team in Royals history, and they will not even listen to an argument against that. But if we are to say that the 2015 team, you know, one of two that won a title, is the best team in franchise history, Lorenzo Cain was the best player on the best team in franchise history.
Wow.
Sam Mellinger is in studio. We'll talk Chiefs after this on WHB.
Yeah, so at corner, I mean, we feel really good about Kendall Fuller, obviously, and Stevie Nelson has shown that, you know, he continues to get better and can help us out. And then you bring in Dave Amerson, who's a guy that, I mean, look, we know he's been a little up and down on the consistency level, but he has all the physical attributes that you need. And look, I mean, we still have guys like Keith Reeser and Will Redmond that, you know, people won't really talk about, but I mean, Will Redmond was a mid-round pick by the Niners coming off an injury, and Keith Reeser was a guy we liked. I think he, too, also was coming off an injury out of Florida Atlantic a few years back. So a lot of people won't talk about those guys, but when you start stacking those type of players in regards to what's out there in the draft class, you feel good about them. But, you know, we'll be certainly, again, aggressive in all areas. And the defensive line, you know, Chris, we feel, has a chance to be one of the best in the NFL, and Xavier Williams, I think, filled a really big void for us. And, you know, getting Allen healthy and playing full 16 games was big, but we'll have opportunities to add depth at both positions, I believe.
That was Brett Veach at his Friday pre-draft press conference. I was out there covering for Sports Radio 810 WHB and had some interesting comments from Brett Veach on Friday that we've played so far today. There he was talking about the depth or lack of depth at corner and defensive line. And earlier on, we played clips of him because I'm trying to make Jake feel better about the defense. And we played some clips of him talking about different players. And he said that, and it was his quote, that we think that Reggie Ragland is going to be a star. And when your GM says that, he wouldn't say that to anybody else. That means something. And he called Ragland and Hitchens, they're going to be the dynamic duo. And I think I'm very excited about that, especially DJ, and he had declined, and the revolving door that was next to him. When you have Ragland and Hitchens, along with Eric Berry coming back, the run defense will be improved. And I've seen the run defense, I've seen the heart and soul taken out of this team, not being able to stop the run in several big games for the past couple of years, like the playoffs. But Sam Mellinger, we're just a couple of days away from the draft. So how do you feel right now with that second round pick? If they don't use their ammunition to move up into the first round, second round, if things are all even, nothing crazy happens, what's the position you would most like addressed on Friday and Saturday?
Cornerback or edge? That's it. I think that they're soft at corner. You know, I think Kendall Fuller is really, really, really good. You know, all I've watched is, you know, his snaps from last year. But I watched them all, and God, he is really good. Like, you know, if you watch him, you know, even on the relatively few plays, and coincidentally, the biggest play, I think this is true, the biggest play that he gave up was actually against Travis Kelce in that game at Arrowhead. Kelce kind of faked him out and then went down the seam a little bit, 20-some yards, 30-some yards, something like that. That was kind of it. He is really, really good, but they are really, really soft after that. And I think that's a problem. You know, the defense, look, I do think they'll be better against the run. Absolutely do. Even without Benny Logan, who I think is an underrated presence. You know, just those two linebackers, together. I just, they'll be a little bit more nimble, a little bit more agile. I think they'll be a little tougher against the run. They're not going to be run stuffers, but I think they'll be a little tougher. But, you know, I mean, you guys know, like, the playing defense in the NFL is about getting to the quarterback and stopping the pass. And, you know, Justin Houston needs to stay healthy, and he can't, like we saw last year, if he's the only legitimate pass rusher on the field, you can shut him down. You know, you can, I shouldn't say it like that. You can limit his effectiveness if he's the only one that you have to worry about. And not just that, but then if the quarterback has more than 2.5 seconds, you know, there's going to be 2-3 receivers on any given play who aren't covered by Kendall Fuller and who, you know, you can pick on a little bit. So I still think that that's going to be a big problem. So if they can get somebody, and look, at the end of the second round, I think it's hard to get an edge rusher that's going to be an immediate presence, obviously. You know, there should be some corners, you know, maybe more depth corners, but even if you can find your third corner, you know, with that second round pick, I think that would be an upgrade.
Do you think that they believe that Dee Ford will be that guy this year? And the reason I ask that, because I think that the answer to this question could determine how aggressively they would try to move up in this draft. If they feel confident that Dee Ford can step forward and be a real pass rushing threat opposite Justin Houston, they might not feel the urgency to move up and get that guy. But if they don't feel confident, they might say, you know what, we need to trade next year's second round pick and something else and get up to where we can get a real legit pass rusher.
I think that they would love to trade up. But I think that, you know, the context around them is so much different than last year. We talked so much, all four of us talked so much last year about how the context made so much sense for them to trade up and get a quarterback. They had all these extra picks. The rest of the roster was set, all that stuff. It's so much different this year. Like, they don't have, you know, sort of that inventory of picks that they had last year. Now, are you going to give up, you know, next year's first to move up? I don't know, maybe. If you
got two second round picks next year, you got two third round picks this year,
if you fall in love with somebody, but like that, you're gonna have to give like all that up, you know what I mean, to move up. So I'll be really surprised. So the reason I'm answering your question like that is, if they don't trade up into the first round, I don't necessarily see that as, you know, Dee Ford is our guy. You know, and Dee Ford, even if he is a really, really good, you know, effective double-digit sack kind of guy, he's still pretty short-term, you know, in you know, sort of the broader picture of the Chiefs. So that's
contract year for him.
Right. So, you know, then there's, you know, Tano Passanio that's, you know, may or may not be kind of waiting in the wings. I was, you know, I think we talked about this last week or the week before, but I was pretty impressed with him in that Denver game, whatever that's worth. I thought he did pretty well in that game, showed some progress, showed, you know, looked like a guy who was learning and getting better and sort of growing into, you know, an incredibly physical, you know, body. I mean, that guy is gifted. So I don't know. Like, I guess what my short answer is, I don't necessarily think that if they don't trade up into the first, that that's a sign that, you know, that they really believe in D.
Here's what, we played this earlier, but I won't play this again since you brought him up. Here's what Brett Veach said about the expectations for Passanio.
Well, no, I mean, just, I mean, that's the thing with Tano. So Tano came from Villanova, obviously a 1AA program, and they use him all over the field. And you know, we brought him here and asked him to do a bunch of different things. So for a while, he's playing 34 outside backer, and then we kicked him inside to big end. But I think, you know, having a year with our strength and conditioning program and having a year with our staff and the terminology, just and getting used to the speed of the NFL. It's one thing to go from Alabama to the NFL or from to LSU to the NFL, but when you go to Villanova to the NFL, it's obviously a little bit different. So he's done a great job in the offseason program, and he's been busting his tail, and I think he'll be a guy that will be able to really help us out.
And then one more question about Passanio. They talked about his weight. What weight he'll come in this year?
Yeah, I think he'll be right around that 275, 280. I think he'll give you some stand-up edge rush and potentially, you know, kick inside in some nickel and some dime stuff. But I just think the adjustment from year one to year two is always a big deal with these guys, just getting acclimated to the speed and you know, day in and day out regimen. But I think he'll be in good position to help us out this year.
They always say the most a player improves is from first year to the second year.
Hopefully that will be true for Tano Passanio. Now I wanted to ask all three of you guys this. We'll end with this because I don't think we ever really talk about this. So yesterday I had a chance to watch a feature on E60 about Dontari Poe, and it was terrific. I don't know if you guys have seen this yet.
Mm-mm.
It's called Three Brothers, and it's about him and his two brothers growing up. And, you know, basically he was talking about how his, you know, two brothers were everything to him, you know, role models, father figures. And he had one brother that he looked up to that was in the band at school. And so Dontari Poe played drums in the band and, you know, graduated and made good grades. So Dontari Poe wanted to do that.
Well,
but then he had another brother that did not do those things. And was always getting arrested and always getting in trouble. And Dontari Poe kind of was torn and, you know, wanted to emulate his other brother. Until finally his brother went to jail, I think a couple of times, and ended up going to prison for 7 years and told him, look, you can't do what I do. You're a good kid. You know, you got talent. You've got things to do. You don't want to follow me, you end up where I am. And it was a really interesting story. And so the whole time he was here in Kansas City, his brother was in prison, and he talked about how much it bothered him. And finally his brother was released last year, and it said it made his family whole again. Really well done. Really interesting piece at on E60. And they showed the great workout he had at the combine that led the Chiefs to draft him. And, you know, he made a couple of Pro Bowls here. And then he was second team All-Pro, and we all remember Hungry Pig Wright. And then he left. Benny Logan comes in, and I think we all universally said, based on what we were hearing at Arrowhead, well, Logan's going to be better against the run. They have to worry about the back problem. Benny Logan's going to be an upgrade. Well, Benny Logan was here, and varying opinions of what he was. Now he's gone, and I feel like that's something that's kind of a weakness, the depth, the defensive mm-hmm. line or defensive line. Poe goes and has a good year with Atlanta. And now he signed a 3-year, I think, $28 million deal with Carolina. It's like $13 or $14 million guaranteed. I'm reading all these different things about Atlanta and Carolina going into the draft. And Atlanta, a lot of people that cover Atlanta, boy, they got to fill the hole with Dontari Poe. He was very effective for them last year. Carolina very excited about signing Dontari Poe. And it's not for a whole lot of money. Was that a mistake? Parting ways with Dontari Poe, considering it really wasn't going to break the bank? And he fit in here. He fit into the culture. He was a Chiefs guy. And, I mean, I think he was maybe a little bit underappreciated. Was that a mistake parting ways with him or no?
In hindsight, I believe it was. Now, to be fair, at the time, I understood and probably agreed with it just because of the back.
Right.
I am terrified of back injuries. I mean, with professional athletes, I just think that those things can be debilitating. And, you know, amplify that with a 300 and varying, you know, 340-ish pound man whose job it is to bang up against other 300 and some pound men. I totally understood the caution. Now, I didn't know that he could be had for 1 year, $8 million, which is what Atlanta got him for, right? I think it was the same contract that Benny Logan got.
Right. And even this contract, though, 3 years, $28 million, but it's like 13.5 guaranteed.
That's not much. So, that's one of those things. You're absolutely right. In hindsight, probably a mistake. But at the time, boy,
My last memory of Dontari Poe was him being on the field as the Steelers ran the ball up and down the field on the Chiefs in that playoff game.
That's also
game.
True.
And that's not. I'm not saying it was all his fault.
Sure. Yep.
But.
Yep. I mean,
Didn't get better, though. There's no doubt about that. They didn't get better at that position when they let him go.
And even now...
That's the point. They're still searching.
Yeah.
And he's an effective player. But even now, he's probably, you know, 75% of what he would be if he just had... You know, boy, his first year or two... I'll never forget the swim move he had against the Cowboys. The Cowboys had a center, and Dontari Poe just did like a crossover. I mean, he's just like an NBA point guard, just like this crossover on the Cowboys centers, just got 300. I think at that time he's playing at 346.
Remember that game against Seattle when Seattle came on the field with a chance to drive and win it? And he took the game over and ended that drive almost single-handedly.
Yes, yes. And I don't know that we'll ever see that again. But, you know, gosh, 70. As it turns out, 75% of Dontari Poe is still a hell of a player, still better than most interior defensive linemen.
I always enjoyed talking with him and covering him.
Uh-huh.
And I root for him. And I'm glad he stayed healthy. And I'm glad that he got – and if you get a chance, I don't know, on demand or if you see it pop up, it's called Three Brothers. It's only like 15 or 20 minutes. Really, really good. And does some good insight into what drives Dontari Poe. Sam Ellinger, hopefully we drive you to I don't know.
He's going to drive away from here as fast as possible.
I'm going to drive you, you know, to you know what, to continue to be great. Will you?
Thank you, thank you. I will try. Jake, have fun tomorrow, buddy.
I will. I'll stay awake through the whole show.
We're so excited.
Really pumped for you.
I'm excited for you.
You should be. Everybody should be.
Are you excited for yourself?
I'm pumped. I'm pumped.
Let me ask you this: like in this moment, are you almost glad that you passed out and did the thing at the last show and kind of missed the show before that?
Well, now it builds it up.
Yeah,
now
you wouldn't be as excited as you are right now. So good for you. Right. You planned ahead.
Should be a beautiful night. Lee Zach's got a beautiful night for us.
And here's the best thing. So I played the set
on his birthday.
I read the set list from the first concert.
Because
the tour just started last week.
Oh boy!
And so three set lists, all three totally different, which is awesome.
Yeah.
Right. That's what I love.
No predictability.
Yeah. So who knows? But it's gonna be good. And you know what? You're gonna be good
every day. I try.
We'll be right back after this with Herm Edwards on Sports Radio 810 WHB.